good people of the internet. It is I, Tommy Kelly, and this is Magic People. It's been a while since we did one of these, for many reasons. Workflow reasons mostly, in that I wanted to spend a bit more time doing the comic, which is coming out soon. Should be coming out this month, all going to plan. But because Spud was on holiday this week down with his in-laws in the middle of nowhere in Poland, I decided that I would call up my friend Spherion and have another chat. He was the first guy I did the Magic People podcast with, so it seemed fitting. But also, he's in the same time zone as me, which makes it an awful lot easier. But it was great having a chat with him again. I managed to pronounce his name correctly this time, which is means I get a gold star. In it, we talk about a number of different things, from magic to creativity to general outlook on life, a bit about the lockdown, loads of different things. So I hope you enjoy the chat. And we'll see. The Magic People kind of section of the podcast will be sporadic and comes out when it comes out. But I haven't forgot about it. So, look out for more episodes when they appear. So, good people of the internet, enjoy this chat and I will talk to you all soon. Be well. So, Spherion, am I getting that right?
Blast!
Yeah, my trick for remembering that is, or to be pronouncing it, is to replace the O with an A, and it seems to work with my accent. So
that is exactly what you have to do. And I remember every time I hear you say it, thinking, just use an A instead, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, just spell it properly, then. You know?
That doesn't sound like the kind of thing I'd do.
Is there a gematria equivalent or something that you need to spell it, or is it it's an amalgamation of other words, though, is it, or something that's like...
No, it was just made up. Well, I say made up, as we spoke about before. It was pinched from, what's it called? Torturer's Apprentice, I think it was called.
I haven't read.
And when I had to come up with a name on short notice, I went, I'll use that. But because I hadn't ever seen it written down, I made up my own version, and it kind of stuck. So that's it.
Cool. So the big question then, I suppose, what have you been doing since the last time I talked to you? Magically. I suppose I don't need to know yet. Well, maybe I do, because we had the lockdown.
I have been sitting here in this chair for 40 hours a week, pretty much constantly, since we got locked down. You realise it was the 1st of January when we had our last chat.
Oh, was it? Right, okay.
Yeah. It was...
How the world has changed, man.
I know, jeez. Right?
We had no idea.
There I was, slightly hungover, obviously, because of the day, and thinking, oh, yeah, I'm looking forward to 2020. This is going to be a bright, brand new year. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah.
And, little did we know.
Yeah, in many ways, though, I think I've talked to you about this over the time, but a lot of the lockdown was lovely. But I understand it wasn't for a lot of people. Like, it was very different experience for my mother, say, than mine, who's literally didn't leave her house for 3 or 4 months or whatever it was. And, you know, was putting on the brave face that, oh, I'm grand and grand. And of course, when you go to meet her after, she went, it was hell, like, you know, horrible. I am, I suppose, very aware that it's easy from my vantage point to go, well, you know, it was good and it was a thing. But for other people, like you're saying, sitting there 40 hours, dealing with other people and trying to accommodate your job around these things, I suppose it could be a lot harder. Not a lot, but it definitely was a lot harder because, number one, you're dealing with other people.
Yes.
I have the luxury of mostly not doing that.
Yeah, I'm very jealous of your situation in that respect.
What was your overall, what was your overall feel of the lockdown? Let's not do conspiracies, but more like an emotional roller coaster that was the last couple of months. How did you feel? How'd you get on? What was the... Go conspiracy if you want.
I won't actually, because I deliberately chose not to even look at any of those. And in fact, the only time I ever heard about it would have been probably through your lips the people on Discord or perhaps Spud or whatever. But I personally don't investigate those rabbit holes too much. I don't believe there really was any kind of conspiracy. I think it's just, frankly, I mean, when I first heard about the virus back when it started bubbling around circa the beginning of the year, I just thought this is going to be bat flu. You know, in the way that we've had bird flu and swine flu, and it'll be a thing that happens all the way over there.
Yeah, it's a thing that happens in the newspapers and on the news.
Yeah,
But not in my life. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not going to affect us one iota. And we went trundling off to Spain on holiday in February, and then I came back to a new contract. And then 2 weeks later, they went, right, you lot, you're all working from home. And I was like, what? Okay. Hence, I have been sitting in this chair ever since.
Wow, yeah.
But no, I mean, we've been chatting, and for the first few months of it, I was entirely okay. I'm used to working from home, so that wasn't a big shift of my routine. Yeah. And, you know, we spoke about this. I felt that generally the energy from around me and the people that I interacted with, and okay, you had some doomsayers and all the rest of it knocking around, but for the most part, I was actually feeling pretty good about myself. And
yeah,
except for the fact that all of the things that I do outside the house stopped, you know, I was in good form. And yeah, it's really only the last month or two, actually I'd say July and August, when the weather has been hot and I've been sitting here just away from my garden, thinking, man, I wish I could be out more. And
did you just not get the amazing weather like around April over there? No.
Oh, we did.
We had like the best summer we've ever had in April this year. You know.
Yeah. Well, we've had it has been lovely actually. I mean, I live in south of England, so you know.
Oh, your climate's better anyway. Yeah,
First of all, I've got better weather than you anyway. Sorry.
Well, it's true. It's a true fact. Fact of nature.
I would say we probably get the best weather of the entire country here.
Oh, really?
Most of the time, yeah.
Right.
You couldn't live in a better place for that. In the UK.
Sure. I'm sure, you know, like Spain, slightly better weather, France occasionally.
Spain was lovely at the end of February, I'll tell you.
Yeah, well, that's it.
Hence we went. But yeah, it has been lovely. But it was spring, and I do like my spring. But I've always sort of maintained my favourite time of the year is spring days and summer nights. And so it was absolutely fine sitting here in this, you know, dining room that opens onto the garden during the day, because it was warm and I could have the back door thrown open. I get a bit of a breeze and it was glorious. But then the last 2 months I'm sitting here sweltering, thinking, I don't like this very much. And as I say, you know, under normal circumstances, 3 or 4 days a week or 3 or 4 nights a week, I'd be out. I'd be doing things. I'd be at Aikido, or I'd be, you know, gymnastics or dance or one of the many other things I do to keep myself fit and mobile.
Yeah.
And I've been, you know, I have been trying to work out, but it's hard. I think it's not the fact that I couldn't do it here, but by being somewhere else, I am forced to do that thing, and my natural procrastination can't get in the way. Once I show up at the dojo for the next 2 hours, I'm training, you know, whether I want to or not, you know.
It has that level of accountability that you just don't get, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, while I could do yoga here, and I have done once or twice, you know, it was not the same as going to my yoga class on a Thursday night at 8 o'clock going, right, well, it doesn't matter if I'm in the mood for it, I'm going. You know.
Yeah, and I understand, because I remember when I was doing the photography club stuff, and as detrimental that was to my mental health in many ways, it was also, it's amazing how much more photography I did.
Yeah,
because you had to, you know, and that's it.
Why be there?
Well, that's it, you know, exactly. And so I do, and I remember years ago, like, I suppose it was going to different, like, I remember years ago going to Weight Watchers, this is a good while ago, and I remember thinking, oh, sure, I could do this at home, there's no need to pay the tenner to this woman, this fabulous looking tin woman every week or whatever. Yeah. And then you stop and you go, oh, I'm eating a lot more, that's strange. And it is because all you're doing is going to get weighed or whatever, but it's like it's like going up to the front of the class and the teacher will give it to you. I had a Snickers. Ooh.
Absolutely, you know? Yeah, yeah.
But it is funny that kind of accountability that you don't. But I suppose then if you have any sort of inner critic or an inner demon, it can go a bit too far in your own personal thing where you can kind of chastise yourself too much too. So, I mean, as with all of these things,
I'm pretty easy on myself, it must be said. I've been through my years of hating myself, and I've sort of, you know, I've decided, you know what, just live and let live, man. You know, you could be a lot worse. At least you do exercise when you're pushing 50. A lot of people don't.
Well, that's it. Did you do all the walking that everyone in the world did when it was locked down? Because it was literally the only time you were allowed to leave your house. Oh, was that the situation over there? Maybe it wasn't.
Oh, it was the same here. Yeah. We again, very luckily, I live in a fairly suburban area, right on the edge of the countryside. So we've had the opportunity to go for long walks and get the bike out when it wasn't tipping with rain, which it did occasionally. So we've been out. It's been good, and again, connecting with nature, which is something I love doing, and as with so many of the positive things for me, often I find myself too busy to do them, you know. Right. And I'm not too busy. I could have found time, but the trouble is I tend to find time for all of the things that I want to do, whether it's doing some writing, doing some artwork, doing some exercise, going for walks, indulging, you know, practicing magic, whatever. I spread myself too thin, and thus many things don't get done for long periods of time because I'm concentrating on my favourite today. And then that slowly shifts.
I've found that I suppose the best kind of remedy for that is to... I'll tell you where it came from. I've listened to a book, audiobook recently, about Philip Glass, who's a... he's a composer, and he's a very interesting type of guy. And he was saying what he used to do is that he would have 3 hours a day that he'd compose, and if any other time a song idea came to him or anything, he'd go, fuck right off.
You know, really?
Come to me during these appointed hours.
In your allotted time.
Yeah, and he says that's what he did for years. And then he changed it at some point to see if it was any different after 20 years, and he says he was he wasn't getting more work done by having, you know, allowing... The you know, things to happen whenever they wanted. That it was just when he had his office hours for his inspiration, he could then do the study, he could do the other stuff that he wanted to do. So I think that kind of thing that you will know as well from, you know, any sort of discipline thing, like learning a musical instrument or martial arts, right? Like the 10 minutes a day is always going to be better than the 3 hours once a week.
Absolutely. Know, 2 hours, and I'll tell you what else is better than 5 minutes a day is better than an hour a day. Because an hour a day you won't stick to. As for 5 minutes a day, you will. Yes,
you will,
And typically, if you're doing, you know, some of the times it'll be 5 minutes, but most of the time it'll be half an hour or an hour.
Yes, yes.
But if you try to do an hour a day, you'll do that once every 2 weeks.
Because it gets into, this is my homework, this is my chore, this is a thing I have to do. So a good kind of tip, I suppose, that is, rather than having your guitar in the guitar case, have it, you know, on a stand that you can literally just... as you walk past, you pick it up, you play a few chords, whatever. Whereas if it's like, I used to have it up in the, my guitar's up in the like the spare room, and so I just stopped playing
it. You never saw it.
You never see it. You know, that sort of thing. So so I do understand having the favourites, because I do, that does happen to me, but I also, I tend to see things walking around in rhythms and, you know, cycles.
Yeah,
and things
too.
Have their own. So say this week I'm more into sitting at the piano or playing guitar, and the next week I'm more into, you know, drawing. So you can always tell what you're interested in by what tutorials and stuff you're watching on YouTube. You know, it's, oh, am I learning a bit about music, or am I watching Japanese people draw? What's my interest this week?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, this is it. This is what happens with my magic as well, is I go through... ebbs and flows with that, you know. Sometimes I'm absolutely consumed by what we're doing with it, you know, and that will last 6 months, and then I'll sort of go into a waning time where I'm usually still thinking about it, I'm usually still living a magical life, but I'm doing very little actual practical work.
Even
to the point of the offerings, you know, it'll be like, instead of, oh yes, we're doing a lighting a candle and saying hello every day, to, oh shit, tidy the altar and light a candle for once, you know. Yeah. If I believed that these things were keep and score, I would probably be in trouble. Mercifully, I don't.
But with the magic thing, I suppose, there becomes a point, I think, that it, for me anyway, so your philosophy might be slightly different, but that you come from doing magic, in a sense, to being magic. And by that, I mean, it's just your approach to life, everything becomes a bit magic. So you're not sitting there maybe lighting the candles, doing your thing, but you're seeing the world in a magical way, and you're acting in a magical way.
Very much so.
I think that kind of comes more into it, whereas that, it doesn't really work, where you don't go, well, I'm living guitarily. Guitar is just me, I don't need to practice.
I suppose you could do if you were... if you wrote music rather than just played music. I mean, my guitar practice is purely a playing of an instrument. I still maintain I don't have a musical bone in my body, but I can master a mechanical action and thus produce music.
Okay.
you know.
Can you tell the difference between tones? Like, can you tell the difference between A and G?
No.
If I played one note and then played another note, would you be able to tell the difference between them?
I'd be able to tell that they are different, but I couldn't tell you which ones they are.
Because people with no musical... No, I'm not asking what you know what they are, because people who are tone deaf can't tell the difference. Oh. So to say that you've no musical ability or no bone is a lie.
I merely say it doesn't flow easily from me. Okay. You know? But, you know, when I'm playing and when I'm in the groove, you know, there have been times, because I haven't been playing long. I mean, like, you've been doing it since you were a teenager. I've only picked it up about 5 years ago.
Oh, right, okay, okay.
So this is a new adventure for me.
Right.
And so I'm still in the I suck phase, you know, but very occasionally...
Oh, good news for you. You never get out of that.
Hey!
that's an ongoing concern with any skill, I think.
But I picked it up there a week or so ago, and I'd had a couple of glasses of wine, and I was giving it all. And I was thinking... And I had a really good session. Again, I picked it up for 5 minutes and put it down about an hour and a half later. I went, do you know what? Occasionally, just occasionally, I can play this damn thing. You know,
right,
maybe not consistently,
yeah.
And I wouldn't want to do it in front of people, but for my own amusement, and that's the only reason I started to do it anyway.
If your goal isn't to do gigs or to play in front of people, then amusing yourself is, you know, that's what you're aiming for.
And the vast majority of what I do is that.
Right.
It's self-improvement and self-adventures and, you know, doing things for my enjoyment rather than to be professionally good at them or to make a career out of them or to show off to other people. It's about enriching my life with my skills, you know.
Does that come naturally to you? Because that's a huge thing that I have to make a conscious effort to. Because as I said about the photography club, that was meant to be my release, my bit of fun, you know, just ha ha ha. And then, you know, 3 weeks later, I'm entering photography competitions and, you know,
I think you're a lot
win.
Braver than I am. No, because I don't put that much pressure on myself.
Okay.
I mean, there's quite a few things over the past sort of 4 or 5 years. Over the past sort of 7 or 8 years, I've picked up about 4 or 5 different new things. Which most people would look at a person of my age and go, you're crazy. You're too old to learn that thing, guitar being one of them. And you can argue...
Is that you saying that?
No, like, I've been told that.
Really?
Yeah, I got told that it was about 12 or 13 years ago, because it was just before my son was born, and I was working with a guy, and he had been trained, or he'd been training classical guitar when he was young. And I said to him, and this was before I actually did, you know, years before I did pick up a guitar. I said, oh, I'd love to learn the guitar. And he said, you're too old. And I went, fuck you. I don't accept that from anybody.
No, I think that's kind of shitty. Like, I mean, you're not going to be, you know, you're probably not, you know, unless you start learning violin when you're 6 or whatever, you're probably not going to be, you know, the world's greatest violin player of all time.
But absolutely.
Like, you know, you definitely could pick up the violin at 70 and learn a song and enjoy it and stuff.
But that's the point. If you're doing it for your own amusement, it doesn't matter how good you are. As long as you're only comparing yourself to the guy you were yesterday, or the guy you were a week ago, because, you know, we ebb and flow, don't we? Then I think that's enriching one's life. That is, and, you know, to me, that is what making magic is about. It's about finding things that yesterday were impossible and tomorrow have suddenly become not necessarily probable, but certainly not impossible anymore. And it doesn't matter what that is. It doesn't matter. I mean, obviously, there are some things you can't do unless you have this type of body or whatever. But when I took up gymnastics at the tender age of 41...
Fucking bad charges.
Yeah, and did it for 6 years before I went, you know what, I may well be too old for this. But in that time, I learned to do things that I literally thought were impossible for me.
Right.
And could do them frequently enough for it to not be a fluke.
Sure,
you know?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that's important. I think the instant you give up is when you are too old, you know. Okay, there are certain things that you shouldn't probably do, you know, unless you are a young, fit individual.
Yeah.
But for the most part, something like the guitar, something like, you know, deciding you want to write a book, deciding you want to, you know, I don't know, whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, and I do. Not only do I believe that, I want that to be true. You know, like, I mean, it's I think it would be, if it wasn't true, I'd still believe it anyway. But I do think it's true, you know, because
I think it's true.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just the only
kind of thing is, yeah.
I was just going to say, you asked me earlier on what magic I've been doing.
Yes.
That's the magic I've been doing.
Yes, right.
And
yes, yeah, yeah.
As well as the actual practical applications of those things, I have been doing magic to support those things. Give me the focus, give me the enthusiasm, give me the, you know, hell, if there's a god of music, and we all know there is,
give me
some of that talent and allow it to flow through my fingers and be a better guitarist, you know.
So would all your magic be transformational, higher magic, not to use those antiquated terms, I suppose, rather than the low magic of, you know, get me the new car, give me the money, or, you know, get my ex to love me again.
Yeah. No. I would say,
are you like me? Do you also like the stuff?
I like the stuff. I'm big into the stuff. And actually, the magic that I did last year has really come to pass. And I now have the stuff.
To the point that
I don't really need... Well, I can't think of anything more I want from the stuff point of view
that is within
reasonable realms, anything more is just being, you know, and I know this sounds trite, but anything more than what I've got is just being greedy,
right? You know,
I don't need a Ferrari. My car is fine, my house is fine, my, you know, my guitar is fine, my whatever, you know. I do some give me the stuff magic,
and
I'm pretty happy that most of that does come to pass.
Yeah.
Admittedly, through strange and unusual ways. You know, I did a sigil last year to work from home. I now work from home.
Yeah. Careful what you wish for. Exactly.
But a lot of it is just about self-transformation. It's the alchemy of self.
You know? So tell me this. What does your stuff magic look like? Is it just sigils? Is it, you know, calling up Mercury and having a chat, or how does it look practically? How does it unfold practically?
Sigils are involved now. Earlier, I used to use bind runes and rune scripts a lot, because that was just the direction I came through. I felt an affinity to the runes, and I occasionally used Oum, but I never really got on with it, despite that I heritage and all. But I really did resonate with the runes. I loved the runes as a way to work magic. I never really used them for divination.
Neither did the Vikings.
Yeah, I understand that. And they probably didn't do a huge amount of magic with them either. But that was what I found. That's what I used. And I liked it. And again, it appealed, I think, because I was writing out what I wanted in a codified way.
Right.
And, you know, I'm a computer programmer. That works for me. It resonates. And so I did a lot of that. And what I say I did a lot of that, that would be the bulk of what my spell casting would be. There would be variations of the theme. There might be a candle which is etched into and anointed. It might be on a scrap of paper. It might have been carved into wood. It might have been that sort of thing. But because I was firmly under the belief that I shouldn't use magic trivially, and
why?
Well, because it's a lot of work.
So because of laziness.
partially, again, this is kind of in my own head at the time. This was built in. It was work. It should be work. You should be crafting these things. You should be putting some of yourself into it. You should be doing it. And you shouldn't do it trivially, because I was also infected with the idea of this, you know, you get back what you put out, and sometimes it's bad. You know, you pay the cost. And I had done spells and paid the cost.
More than just doing a sigil to work at home and then, you know, causing the pandemic.
Yeah, like, yeah. There would definitely occasionally be some proper negative backlash. I mean, this is why I adopted the term paradox backlash. Didn't make it up, but I nicked it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that is how it felt. If you push hard enough against that bubble, you know, that elastic band, that whatever, when you release it, or when you force your way through, something comes back and hits you. Oh, well, maybe hits you.
Yeah,
it just works and you're fine and you don't really ever know about what happened. But sometimes you really do.
And do you think it's like the more you kind of push for something that's slightly, if not saying predeterminism or stuff like that, because that's a different kind of thing, but like if it's, if you've on a certain trajectory, so under certain things that are within that way you're going that are likely to happen more than other things, but if you push for like a greater unlikeliness or something, do you think, does that necessitate a snapback more than doing magic for something that's, you know, kind of more conducive to what you're actually doing? Does that make sense?
It does exactly make sense. And years ago, I wrote something to that effect. I did certainly believe that, that the more unlikely a thing you were going for, the bigger and more, the more powerful a kickback.
Or the bigger sacrifice needed, I suppose.
Maybe. But things have changed, you know, and I am now no longer the teenager doing things with the teenager's wants and desires and perhaps short-sightedness of what we want. You know, we tend to be very immediate back then. Mm-hmm. I've become a bit, I would like to believe I've become wiser. I've certainly become more knowledgeable.
Right. Okay.
And I can see a little bit further, but I also choose what I'm doing a bit better. I suppose the analogy I would use now, instead of, you know, the flick back of a rubber band, is that you can either carve with the grain or against it.
Yes.
Right. One of them is going to be easier and one of them is going to be less hard. Mm. Either way, you're manipulating the wood, but you can choose how you approach that. And I think that comes from practice and experience and hopefully wisdom.
You know? Yeah, because that would kind of then play into the same type of thing that I feel about creativity, in that it's kind of, you have to allow, in a sense, to be a channel, and not channeled in the way we normally talk about channel.
Yeah.
Allow...
Be the conduit.
Be a conduit rather than a channel, where you have to allow the art be what it kind of wants to be, rather than... It's like the whole thing of, you know, Michelangelo's David. He goes, well, David's in there, I just have to remove the bits
remove
that
the stuff
there.
That isn't him.
So I do think, and kind of, that's one of the things then that, in a sense, stops me from doing practical magic, in that there's a number of reasons, but one of the things is that I feel that if everything is kind of balanced or in accord, and, you know, I'm going with the grain of the wood, you know, that doesn't mean sitting doing nothing. You know?
Oh, of course not.
You're going the proper trajectory. Then all the other things will tend to fall into place.
Yeah.
And kind of why I think that is because when things aren't in place, it seems to affect everything else.
And absolutely.
If you start going against the wood, or there's some unresolved something in your life, say there's... And it can be annoying in a sense, because it could be your relationship with your sister, for as an example, can be affecting your work life, and they're not connected remotely, but it's because there's that kind of blockage in the new age terms, the blockage of energy, the flow's not there, that it seems to have this kind of, I don't know, effect on all the other things. And I definitely noticed things contracting or slowing down if I'm avoiding something in particular, to the point that it'll really go, now you have to really sort this out, because we've stopped everything, man.
But I think they may be seemingly unrelated, but I don't think they are. I feel like we're at the spider in the middle of a web, and your sister may well be over there, and your job may well be over there, but if that thing's discordant over there, there's ripples, man.
Vibrations
or whatever in the ether that ultimately begin to rock your boat. If something is drawing your attention away, you know, and I don't know how woo-woo you can imagine it, but if your attention isn't where you want to be going, you're not really going to do the best. As a person who spends most of his time with attention the wrong place, I am aware of the consequences of that. And I think this is what I've learned over the years, and not just learned, but start to put into place. You know, you start to get your house in order, and then things become generally easier.
Yes,
you know?
And I think there's one danger of it, though, and that's what I've noticed, is that you kind of then go, automatically get into the almost destiny predetermination thing of that. Go,
ooh,
well,
don't like that.
You know, no, no, I don't. And it's definitely it's a failing of this kind of not a failing of the philosophy. It's a trap that's easy to fall in when you're kind of going, oh, if I just have everything in balance, everything will go out. Because then you tend to go that whole thing of, if it's for me, it won't pass me, and you know, and then you kind of go, well, You can still try.
Totally.
And sometimes, you know, you have to put the effort in, or you have to make the decision,
or
you have to say the thing, or whatever. Yeah. So a great thing recently, Alan Chapman said to me, and I was just kind of opening the thing in my head, where he's going that, say you're in a relationship, not in a relationship, say you are madly in love with this woman, and she's madly in love with you, but until one of you actually say those words,
nothing happens.
But it doesn't make it any less true. You still love her, she still loves you, but it's the saying of it, or, you know, whatever, that makes the thing. And I thought, and it's kind of, well, that seems to describe a lot of magic. And go, why would you do that? Well, you know, why do you have to, I don't know, allow, let me see if I can, like, you know, oh, you have to ask the angels, if you work with angels, to, you know, why don't they just do it for you? Because it's something about kind of, until you speak it into more. Well, I mean, they're
called spells,
you
know. Because you have to seize the day.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to grab it. You have to grab life and go, look, you know, if you just sit there hoping things will happen. I mean, this is the difference, I think. I think this is the difference between those who practice magic and those who just wish upon a star.
Okay.
You know, the difference is the desire and the will to make some kind of action.
Yeah, yeah.
To actually do something, no matter how trite or pathetic or weak-willed that may be, there is a huge difference between action and non-action.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Which is like the New Age thing. I don't know if you've ever spent any time with Abraham Hicks or any of that kind of stuff. They're so popular. Like, The Secret was essentially about them, and then it was all taken out of The Secret because they just said, this is too weird, you know, this channeling thing and all that stuff. So that, it was like they were the most popular. But they really put emphasis on the fact that you don't need to take action. That it's, that this thinking things will be... thinking of your new car, get you your new car without doing anything, which I just goes, well, how's that working out for you?
I was just about to say those exact words. Yeah. How's that working out for you? Because... Yeah. You know, if that was the case, we'd all be driving Ferraris, man. We all would.
Well, if that was the case, think about how many, you know, people, all the porn that's been watched, you know, like we'd all be, you know, we'd all be having sex with porn stars or whatever, you know, whatever. Like, there's so much of the time that we do spend mentally focusing on things, you know, I suppose that kind of chaos magic call back to that as well, you know, the ejaculation releases the energy, blah, 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 blah. So it might be a bad example. But, like, think of all the times that I think that the initial intention is probably where the magic is, though. That, like,
yeah.
But it's I've had a number of occasions where I have solidly said, this is going to happen tonight, or whatever. Some, you know, this is going to be resolved tonight. I'm getting this phone call, and it seems to be a different quality to that thought, but it still involves me going and doing something.
Definitely, yeah.
But I do think the impetus or the seed or whatever it is. Is intention. So, well, I'm not completely dismissing intention because it's obviously, you know, clearly, particularly in creativity, the intention is, you know, huge and, you know, very, very important.
Absolutely. And I think that it's the difference between intention and attention. You know, people will pay attention to a thing and wish it was theirs. People with intention will wish it was theirs and make a decision that they are going to make it so. Now, it doesn't always happen that way,
but
that's the difference between the two. It's a passive versus active wish, you know.
Yeah.
Nobody who's made anything great did it by accident. Well, maybe there was.
Possibly,
but
yeah.
Almost certainly, any of the things that you would name or point at and say, that's amazing, that's a thing that is a masterpiece or it was brilliant. It might have been a one-off. It might have been the fruits of a lifetime's work. But... almost certainly, the person who did that made a decision to follow through with an idea that 100 people may have had that idea, but that guy followed through with it.
I mean, we know this because, like, many times have you had an idea for a movie, a book, whatever, that very quickly someone else does because you didn't write it.
Yeah.
And they did. And it's like the idea goes.
And I'm very aware that I'm sitting here 9 months later still having got only a couple more pages done of mine.
Oh, no.
You know, because I have been busy.
The idea might get up and leave and head over somewhere else and go, oh,
yeah, true enough. And I'm sure it will. And I'm sure. And the other thing is, I know that my way of doing things is not unique to me. You know, I know other people have, if not snippets, then large chunks of my belief system or my way of thinking or my way of looking at things, you know, and those are generally the books that I like to read most because they confirm what I like to think about the universe.
Sure, yeah.
And the ones that I pick up that are completely against what I think about, I go, ah, they're rubbish. Clearly they have no idea what they're talking about.
Well, here's a good kind of thing to get into then, that whole idea of only reading stuff that you agree with or, you know, how do you combat, you know, being stuck in your own reality tunnel in the sense of you obviously can't solve a problem but the same mentality that you know, is the one that created it. And if we are, and we're all guilty of this, let's not pretend otherwise, so if we're to kind of only seeing or, you know, trying to, you're only in a, we're only in say, a Chaos Magic Facebook groups. We're not in any Christian groups, so maybe you are.
No.
But you know
no,
what I mean?
Like, wind me up.
You know, we all.
But so do the Chaos Magic ones. Really?
Certainly not. I was just about to say, am I actually in any Chaos Magic groups on Facebook anymore? Probably not. Yeah. So how do you combat that? Or what do you, or you have you just decided that I know what my philosophy is and I'm just going to stay in you know, that town? Or have you, like, you deliberately look at stuff or read stuff that you dislike or disagree with? Or what's your...
I did for a long time. I would say that the first... My practice now has been going on for a bit over 30 years. And I would say for the first 15 to 20 of them, I used to combat everybody. Not in an aggressive way, but really a case of, here's an idea, destroy it for me.
Right,
or
okay,
allow
yeah.
me to destroy yours. Not in a nasty way, but if there was a hole in my argument, I want you to point it out. Because I wouldn't be showing it to you unless I thought it was holeless.
Yes. Yeah.
as it were.
Yeah.
And I'll grant you that by the end of that conversation, I didn't agree with anything they said. But I would like to believe that a week later, I adopted anything good they said into my new argument.
Right,
and,
yes.
took it with me and presented it to the next person and did that. I now feel that my resting belief system is not necessarily without flaws, but it makes me happy, man. You know, it covers a lot of the ground that would have made me feel uncomfortable if I didn't have it.
Yeah.
I feel that I can rest on it nicely with philosophy, with science, with magic, certain brands thereof, you know, and it even allows religion to fit in there. While they may not agree with me, I can hold them in the palm of my hand and see how it fits nicely. I wouldn't use their symbolism, but I can apply my worldview to them and still have them be as right as they ever were, you know. And I realise how arrogant that sounds.
No, it doesn't sound arrogant at all. It would only sound, I think the arrogance would be if you go, and now I want everyone to believe the way I do, which is not what you're saying.
It's definitely an each to their own, you know. I mean, there was a conversation that came up in the Discord the other day about how do you work with a given set of entities versus these guys who work with a given set of entities working these guys with a different set of entities.
Yeah.
And how can this all work together and this be one way and this be another way? And I was thinking, well, pick your own way, you know.
To a
certain extent, nothing you lot are going to say are going to significantly change my mind. Okay, the only thing that's going to change my mind is my own experience. We should definitely try the things.
Yeah.
But now that I've tried the things, I have a practice that will be unrecognizable to older mages and, you know, Crowley Crowley and his ilk. Whatever you like. I had to correct myself just for you. Still Crowley to me.
That's Constantine as well, just so we get on that board as well.
Yes, Tommy. That's exactly what I've said and always have. But yeah, I have a brand of magic that is more that you would recognise from Constantine.
Okay.
But Crowley probably wouldn't. and Alan, Watchman fellow, whose name
is Alan Moore.
Alan Moore would recognise.
Yeah.
And Grant Morrison would recognise, but a lot of the older majors wouldn't. And there will be a lot of those people who are those who are in groups now, solid groups with hierarchies, would hate what I do. And I don't care.
Yeah, cause that's because a question I'm going to ask.
I've tried a lot of their stuff, and I don't like it.
Yeah. That's, do you think a lot of your kind of settling in your belief is that you have no law? When we're younger, we do have to try and convince other people of, you know, the solidness of our belief systems, or, you know, just. Do you think once that kind of disperses, which it seems to do as you get older, has that allowed you to kind of rest in your own? Because you don't have to change people's minds. Yeah. You don't have to convince other people. You know.
I think part of it's that. I think part of it is the fact that, you know, I just don't care what you believe. You know. Yeah. I mean, one of the reasons why we have met and you know, become friends is because of the stuff that you did that I saw, and I went, wow, I really like what he's doing. I love the way you have taken this stuff. Some of it is very similar to my ideas that I haven't seen a lot of people talk about, and some of it is new, and I wonder if I can bring that into my practice and see how that works, you know.
Added with all the bits, you go, I really don't like that, Tommy.
Yeah.
You're totally wrong.
And
which is
including
rich, of course.
That. And also taking a thing that you made with your ideas and going, yeah, now I'm going to do my own thing with them. You know.
Which is, of course, the spirit of chaos magic. And exactly. You know, people seem to forget, not forget, because chaos magic is whatever you want to be, good or bad. You know, that's... Yeah. There is some, I suppose, principal tenets of it being that, you know, belief is the agency of magic, which I think most chaos magicians have just completely thrown away at this point, that they don't believe that to be true.
Yeah, I think a lot of them... I mean, again, I wonder if it's just me getting old. And not the fact that I'm getting old so much as the people I'm watching being most vocal about it are still very young. And they
possibly
haven't worked through the stuff that we did 20 years ago.
And
I'm sure us 20 years ago were just as annoying. You know?
Oh, yeah, to 20 minutes ago, I'm sure I was just as annoying as everyone 20 years ago. I think a lot of the belief stuff... is burnout or kind of a reaction to the law of attraction, and what people with that question, what is the difference between chaos magic and law of attraction if it's both belief based? So there's kind of that aversion, we're not them, we're not those people over there, we're these edgelords over here, or these meme men, you know, or whatever it is.
There's a huge difference between the two ideas again.
Absolutely, I think, it comes back to the attention thing that we've talked about, I think.
Yeah, I think with the law of attraction, it's very much a case, and, you know, far from being an expert or well-studied, but from what I understand it, it's very much a case of, I believe it, it'll happen. As where the idea of belief as a tool in chaos magic is that you are able to change these ideas.
Yes.
You know, as often as you want.
Yeah.
And use any given set of mutually exclusive beliefs on a Monday and a Tuesday and a Wednesday and a Thursday and shift from what is important and useful at any given moment in time. Including the belief that you're able to do it.
That's it.
And if you take that belief into almost anything, you will immediately improve.
Exactly. It's that, and it's the kind of approach of, I have a desire, I have a goal. What would I need to believe for that to be real?
Exactly.
Yeah. You know,
Starting with, this isn't impossible for me.
Exactly. Yes, which you've touched on as well with the gymnastics stuff. Whereas, I suppose, with the law of attraction... the secret kind of stuff, it's I'm just putting it out there to the universe. It's the, you know, what's your man called from as a 15 to 1 or whatever it was, the box thing, Eamon
Holmes?
No, House Party, Noel Adams. I don't know where I was going. Eamon, you know, his cosmic order system thing, all that kind of stuff. Whereas, I don't know if you've spent any time with the reality trance surfing stuff, while it's definitely
fair
the
amount.
Same,
I really liked it. Really,
it's like if I was trying to explain it to my mum, you know, she'd go, how's that any different from law of attraction? Oh, it really is, though. When you,
quite,
you know,
a lot.
Yeah. You know, and the pendulum stuff alone is like, that's a game. And when you go, oh, yeah, no, I see that. And they go, oh, no, that really does kind of change stuff when you start seeing the whole kind of
Yeah, but again, you turned me on to that. You turned me on to Law of Attraction about, I don't know, a year and a half ago, and I was listening to the audiobooks on the drive to and from work.
Reality transurfing stuff.
And I had about an hour's drive each way, so I was making my way through it over the period of a couple of weeks. And as I'm driving along, I'm thinking, yes, that's exactly it. I wouldn't have used those terms, but that's the idea. That's, you're describing again large chunks of. And again, I'm going to use the word belief system for want of a better term, but simply that, you know, this fits with my model, you know, my resting model of magic. You know, when you start to think in these ways, then opportunities present themselves that otherwise may well have been hidden. They're still there, but you didn't recognize them for what they were. When you start to think in certain ways, new eventualities, new choices appear. And that, I think, is, you know, that's the core of my magic. When you begin to think in certain ways, certain possibilities show themselves in a way that you wouldn't have observed before. And the other half of it is knowing the script. I've alluded to it before, but I think story and understanding of story and probability and the likelihood of things, they get encoded into stories. The reason why certain ideas are so famous is because it happens to us all of the time.
Do you mean like the Joseph Campbell type stuff or something else?
Yeah, exactly. Like that, but perhaps on a slightly more humble scale.
Right.
You know, a more universal, it happens to us all kind of way.
Yeah.
You know, the same archetypes that are in the tarot and in the 40 servants, you know.
Yeah.
When
you
are a lover, you live in a particular worldview and certain opportunities become available to you, or at least noticeable to you. And some you are blinded to. You know?
Exactly. Yes, yeah, absolutely.
When you are a father, you see things that the child does not. Not well, just because of an inexperience, a difference of age, but because of different mindsets.
Exactly, which is the thing that if you had the opportunity to go back and somehow talk to you of 30 years ago, there's no possibility of changing that person's mind, even you seeing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know the guy I was, you know, 30 years ago, and he believed he was right, as he still does.
Yeah.
Much of the time.
We just hope we're more right now.
Yeah.
You know. But it is, it's like the things that, like, I could definitely make the 20-year-old Tommy's life much better if he chose to believe some of the things that I've learned along the way. But he's incapable of learning that, or knowing that, because he needs to go through the darkness to get to the light of the thing. It's like, it's that whole thing of you can explain all you want.
Can be taught, but experience teaches you better than words ever can.
Yeah, you can. I definitely have learned from other people's mistakes. Obviously, that is a thing. See, that there is, but there's no kind of... There's that thing, though, that you have where you can know something on one level for all your life, and then one day, oh, I get that now.
Yeah.
You know, and that, I think that only comes through... Yeah, I think that only comes through experience. But I suppose experience can be someone else's experience that you witness to, you know? It's not just...
And, you know, the old idea that, you know, a leopard doesn't change his shorts. That stealing Terry Pratchett. I do know that phrase. You know, isn't true. A leopard can change his spots, but not overnight.
Yes,
it takes them a while. Yeah. It takes them to realise why it is that they need to change and what it is that forces them to change. And I think that's how our lives go. We do change. It's inevitable.
Yeah,
the real question is, do we want to? And I think that's where, this is where, you know, why you couldn't persuade 20-year-old Tommy to change his ways.
Yeah.
Not because he couldn't, because he just doesn't want to.
He won't want to
until he sees new information.
Yeah.
New information that you probably can't just give him. He has to live through.
Yeah. Which I suppose then brings me on to a thing I want to talk to you about. What's your... Given what we're talking about, what's your kind of thing about enlightenment or awakening or this kind of thing? Is that part of your practice? Is that part of your goal? Have you a different goal? Like, is there some trajectory of your magic thing, or is it just about being present and being kind of thing? What's your... Just a simple question.
And here's a simple answer. I think... how do we phrase this? I definitely feel that I have become a lot more enlightened, as on a scale rather than a Boolean value,
over the years,
as I have become to understand the importance of some things and the unimportance of other things. And as I have done, my life seems to have become more clarified, you know, there's, in some cases, much richer experiences. I have let go of things that just shouldn't, I shouldn't have been holding, you know, because they didn't serve me. And I have given more attention to things that I should have given more attention to a lot earlier and have been enriched for it. I think that this is a process. Again, not a you've earned your black belt, mate, you're enlightened, go off.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Chop wood, carry water. You know, it's a process. It's a process that we all go through. And I think anybody, I would like to believe, because I'm not going to claim that I've got it, but I would like to believe anybody who claims that they have done it will probably say the same kind of thing. There may well be a certain point that they can go, I realized a given truth about the universe that allowed me to progress beyond a point of ignorance or a point of non-enlightenment.
But
I would like to believe it's a constant process that keeps on going. And when you get to a certain point of shedding your skin, you know, the old yous, that you kind of go, hang on a minute, this could be a lot easier for us all, couldn't it? You know?
Why am I doing most of this?
If I didn't hold on to my anger, if I didn't hold on to my frustrations, if I allowed love into my life, if I chose beauty over ugliness wherever possible, my immediate world would become infinitely more beautiful and better.
Yeah.
And by the very nature of doing that, those who interacted with me would suddenly have a slightly better world than they had if I was still a grumpy fucker.
Yeah, you know.
Maybe only a little bit, maybe quite a lot, depending on your relationship and the amount of time they spent with you. You know, what's the phrase? You are the sum or the average of the three people you spend the most time with.
Yeah.
Well, I want to spend time with lots of happy, enlightened, decent human beings that will make me the sum or the average of them.
I certainly have
dumped as almost all toxic individuals out of my life, and thus most of the time I'm reasonably easygoing.
I think that the dumping of the toxic people also has to apply to books and philosophies and to online personalities and all
and
these things.
And news.
Yeah.
News.
Well, I mean, absolutely.
It's the biggest one.
Yeah.
You know?
Because it's not news. It's
not.
You know,
no, it's not a horror show.
Yeah.
It isn't real news. It's awful. And I think if you can get rid of that, if you can cleanse your environment, clean your room, man.
You know,
if you can clean your room, your mental headspace of as much of this rubbish as possible, then you will start to feel better. And I think this is why, again, even during the starts of these pandemics, I was feeling quite okay.
Yeah.
I had a job at the time. I still have it, but, you know, at the time I was employed, at the time I had a roof over my head, at the time I had food, at the time I turned off the news, you know, I even though I was undergoing the same thing that almost everybody else was undergoing, you know, as a middle class, you know, Western European kind of guy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, with no immediate health concerns. I was able to sort of see a certain amount of light and joy, you know. Unfortunately, I didn't have the time to go, hey, I can start my new book, or, you know, take up this new thing, or, you know.
Or get your 12 side hustles that you were meant to have.
Yeah, because I had my one actual full-time one.
Yeah, yeah.
But we did okay. And I think that's because I had spent a large amount of time in the previous few years dealing with a lot of that negative shit in my head, negative shit in my space, and going, do you know what? You don't serve me, you know?
Yeah.
Without being nasty, I'm just not going to spend any more time in your company, you know?
Yeah. And I suppose the other thing to add to that is that includes, you know, the various voices that are in your head as well. Yeah. As, you know, it's, there's a lot of my kind of awakening experiences in the kind of bunny-eared versions has been, go, why am I listening to that voice? I don't even believe that. You know,
yeah.
Like, I mean, that's something someone at school told me that I just accepted as being true, yeah. And that I've been telling myself the last 30 yeah. years is true.
Yeah.
And it's both horrifying and instantly, relief and healing. You just go, oh, I can't believe, you know, I've done this to myself, but it's saying, oh, I don't have to do this to myself anymore.
I know. It's like a weight off your shoulders when you relieve one, you know, when you release one of those thoughts or beliefs or, and again, beliefs, you know, we are a subject. We are the world we live in. Our personal reality is those beliefs, you know, regardless of the actual stuff, you know, how we view these things is, it's all a play in our head, which is why I think story is important and belief is important and chaos magic is important, you know, to take control of that, to become the script writer rather than just the actor. But yeah, I mean, I've had my share of those hangers on in my head as well. And they're there
unavoidable,
but they've been given a cup of tea and told to shut the fuck up and sit in the corner.
Yeah.
You know, you're not the only one in here.
And I think that even that, having that realization that there's more than one Sphyrian and there's more than one Tommy, you know, that we're not just, you know, and it depends on, you know, your surroundings. It depends on who you're interacting. It depends on who you're reading at the time. Yeah. All of these things, rather than this kind of notion of one solid personality. Like, you know, we definitely, if we, for some reason, end up hanging out with people that we went to school with, and, you know, you kind of fall into that pendulum, I suppose, in the reality trans suffering. You're definitely a different person around your parents. You know, at Christmas or whatever it is the thing. You're a different person around your kids. You know, you're a different person at work. But I suppose the argument is then, but there's some sort of
solid. Never show them the real you.
But, like, is there a real you, or is it just a constant adaption of different things? Or something I struggled with last year was that kind of thing. Am I nothing more than just a collection of other people's ideas applied differently to different circumstances and to different kind of things? And I think there's a lot of truth in that. There's a kind of I never got to the end of that mystery because I just kind of, I couldn't work it out. Like, there's part of me going, yes, but no. You know, there seems to be some, you know, who's the I behind the person asking who is the I? That kind of a thing. But I could never see him, so I don't know, or it, or whatever is this non-dual thing that we're told is there.
Well, I remember living that conversation with you in the car driving home and thinking and being a little uncomfortable by that notion because I do think there is an essence, an inner essence of us.
Right.
You know, but the phrase I've used before is, we are not things, we're events.
Okay.
I truly believe that. Yeah. You know, nothing that you can think of as a thing is a thing. It's an event. It's a thing that is going through time and changing as it does. Some slower, some faster. You know, we're fire. You know, we consume and we breathe and we live and we, you know, illuminate and then we expire. You know, what happens before and what happens after, who can tell? But we do change, you know, and I think at any given moment, you're allowed to be grumpy Tommy. You're allowed to be happy Tommy. You're allowed to be loving Tommy. You're allowed to be a bitch Tommy. You're allowed to be, well, you are, nobody else may agree with you, but you are all of those things. We are also shaped by the world we're around, you know. I don't know what the name of this is, but there is this wonderful little computer simulation. You refer to Game of Life, but it's similar to that. And it's almost like, and again, perhaps a bit too topical, but like Pandemic, you know, where dots go around and some of them are white and some of them are black.
Okay.
And they shed their energy onto the ones around them. So when a black one hits a white one, they both become grey. And then you put in one or two that never change themselves. They still do the same thing.
Yeah.
And so you can watch these things floating around, much like Game of Life, and you see the entire population either go black or they go white or they become shades of grey and all the rest of it. And I think that's who we are. All of the ideas are those things. All of the people you spend time with, we share our ideas, you know, and if they're positive ideas, if two positive people come together, they generally go away feeling happy about the universe.
Yes,
you put two negative people together, they will go away telling you that the universe is awful. A negative and a positive guy together, well, they both go away feeling, you know, disgruntled.
So I suppose that would imply an informational cosmology to, I suppose, creation, or some sort of, that it's, informational, in that it's not solid, it's just kind of data that's interpreted moment to moment in different ways. No, but then that's getting dangerously close to simulation theory, I suppose.
No. But the thing is that you can look at anything and give it meaning, and then it becomes data.
Yes.
It becomes information. You know, if you know anything about the inner workings of computers, you will know that it's just switches.
Yeah.
And it's only the lens that you look through that determines whether that string of ones and zeros is an A or the color red or it means a thing in a database or whatever. The stuff is still the stuff. The information is about perspective. It's about how you look at things. Mm-hmm. And it may well transmit that data in given ways, positive, negative, which, you know, again, is perspective. It's not nature. You know. So on the one hand, I can see how the information model of magic is a thing.
Yeah.
But it's a thing based on your perspective of it. Whether a given piece of information or data, I don't know, I'm wandering off into dangerous territory.
Would it be instead of the information model of magic, be the meaning model of magic, you know, or the kind of interpretive model of magic or something?
As in, what you choose to believe determines your reality?
Yes, I think that there's something. Yeah, no, I think I was going to say there's something more, but I don't. That's probably not. No, I think that is it. Like what you choose to believe can there be? So here's the question. I'll stumble my around it a bit more first. But is there an objective out there? Then
is it? I think there isn't.
And if there is, have we any possibility of accessing it as humans, as meaning making machines, as pattern seers?
Yes and ish. Yeah, there's an objective out there. Of course there is. You know, it's not all...
Have you ever seen it? Have you ever touched it? Because...
I've licked it.
But I mean, we have...
That's the kind of nutter I am.
Because it's all, like, what we see, what we touch, what we sense is all chemical reactions in our brain.
Yeah. You know, I accept the fact that, yes, we could all be living in a pure simulation. I accept the fact that we could all be living purely in our heads. But I don't think that's the case. I think there is an objective out there. There's a lot of stuff in our universe, a lot of stuff in reality that we will never, never encounter, never have any understanding of. We only have our tiny, tiny, tiny little parcel of our universe. I mean, even just the physical stuff, which is virtually nothing in the universe. Even the physical stuff is so vast we can't even begin to contemplate what's out there. Okay? But the soup that we swim around in, the little bit of matter that we actually exist in, it is still interpreted. So the world we live in, the reality we live in our heads, is an interpretation of the soup that we're swimming through. And when I look at a thing and you look at a thing, we might see the same thing or similar. Well, I don't think any of us sees the same thing. I think we all see similar things.
Yeah.
And some people see radically different things.
So, yes,
I feel that there is an out there. Will we ever know it? Most of it, no. Yeah. And of the tiny, insignificant amount that we do, we will disagree about.
Well, I think that's a perfect...
Chaos Mages will at least admit that.
Brilliant. I think that's a perfect place to end, because I don't think we're going to get to solve any more of the world's problems than that. So anything you want to share before we go? Websites,
really.
Discords, Twitters?
Oh, I'll stick
updates,
it all in the show.
Updates on this book that you...
I need some free time.
Yeah.
This is the trouble. When you spend all your time actually... trying to make it all work for free time is, you know, that's the luxury. That's the one thing I haven't yet figured out how to do with my magic. and still have the life I want.
Yeah, that'd be dangerous magic. Can I have free time to do write the book? Yeah, well, I've learned, love the ways that could happen.
I have learned not to spell for that. That would be a mistake. Sephirianlefay.com, I think it is my occasional blog. The Apocryphal Emporium.
Oh, yes,
where we sell
yes,
the
yes,
occasional
yes.
silly T-shirt.
Which you'll have seen me wear in many a vlog.
Absolutely. And we've got a couple more designs that should be going up as soon as I can find some free time to do it.
Awesome.
And yeah, that's me. Aside from that, be excellent to everybody.
And party on, dude.
Absolutely, man. Awesome.
Thanks very much. Talk to you again
Thank
soon.
Thank you too. I'll see you soon.